100 word stories.
Hey, ho, let's go. Hey, everybody, this is Lawrence Simon here over in 100 word stories podcast land, coming to you on a Sunday morning, waking up, coffee. Oh, yeah. Getting that going. Still, after months, have not bothered getting the Baileys. But a special thing is coming up this week. I'm probably going to get the Baileys, get the lavender bubble bath, all the stuff I ever wanted. That's right. Turning 44. Ugh. Well, in Texas Hold'em, that's sailboats. Anyway, enough of that crap. How about some 100 Word Stories Weekly Challenge on the topic of deception? Hey, I thought it was going to be a dumb topic, but you know what? It's the dumb ones that turn out to be the most fun. And we got a lot of fun stories for you, including the conclusion of Singh's Lakshmi plot. All right, this is going to be big, but you got to wait for it. All right, you got to wait, because there's a whole bunch of folks here. Good stuff. Everybody's throwing rocks today. Everybody's batting 1,000 on this one. This is a good one. You are going to like it. So settle back. What was it that Tom Snyder used to say? Fire up a color teeny, settle back, and watch the pictures as they fly through the air. There are no pictures except for the cat. So, you know what? Just settle back and listen to this. All right? Here comes Thomas. I think you're going to like this. How do we hit stop?
We were deceived. Angela was an expert at deception. She accessorized with a number of plastic and rubber accoutrements, which enhanced her average frame. On the dance floor, from a distance of 10 meters, she was a statuesque figure, buxom, thin-waisted, voluptuous hips, and derriere. Closer, the camouflage was apparent. Skin didn't match, supplements slipped out of position. Adhesives warmed and wet with perspiration were out of alignment, or pulled by gravity, shifted down and away, leaving a trail of adhesive or toner. She was the belle of the ball until she slithered out, covered in her enormous green wrap. Helmet deceived the girls at the beach. Slipping a smoked kielbasa into his Speedo, he stood proud, cocky, hands on hips, drinking from a bota. He learned this deception from his frat brothers at State. They would stock up at Safeway before driving to Santa Cruz. One of the lads used all his cash to gas up his olds, so he had to make do without any sausage props. He borrowed a pair of gym socks to form a bolster that he stuffed into his swimsuit, explaining his unusual outbreak of athlete's foot to the university doctor was a challenge. The magician, Jonathan, was a master of deception. His specialty was close-up magic. Years of practice honed his hand magic skills to the master level. Twice a year, he and his lady friend would travel to the magic castle, a showcase for the world's best magicians, and headquarters for the Academy of Magical Arts, and an exclusive club for magicians and fans of magic. Last year, Jonathan performed the Kapalowski Ultra Move, wowing the audience and other performers at the show. His friends begged him for the details of his trick, offering money or a night with their woman. Deception Lake is located about 30 miles due west, just on the other side of Nichols Corner. The lake water is dark because of the minerals dissolved in the water. Only 2 feet deep at the shore and 2.5 feet deep in the middle. Deception Lake has claimed the lives of scores of drunks and careless show-offs that run from the beach and dive into the water, taking a high arc and crashing head first into the rocky bottom. Signs were posted around the lake, but teenagers and miscreants removed the signs as fast as they were installed. I became a purveyor of deception when I went to a writing workshop at her home. I entered the dark tiled foyer, and when it was requested that I remove my shoes, I asked for 2 plastic bags so I could slip them over my boots. The ploy worked, and I was allowed entry. I had a hole in the toe of my sock. The 4 women read their work as I sat on the couch 10 feet away from their tiny, ornate table crowded with manuscripts. I excused myself, saying I remembered I had left something in the oven.
What did you leave in the oven? What did you leave in the oven, Thomas? Oh, no, not some half-baked thoughts. No! My oven's full of half-baked thoughts. Actually, my refrigerator is full of half-baked thoughts. Leftovers! Thank you, Thomas. Okay, so, folks, I have to ask you. When I do my weirdo reactions, that doesn't detract from the stories, does it? It's my way of showing that at least I'm sort of, kind of, listening, but... What do you think? Should I just say thank you and then do my weirdo reactions? Let me know in the comments. You control the vertical. You control the horizontal. You control the third dimension, the altitude, and the amplitude, I suppose. You can turn the volume down. But let me know. Some folks listen and, you know, I don't like this and I don't like that. It doesn't mean that I'll change, but I'll listen. I will listen to you. Your opinion is valid. It may just not be constructive, because I am a weirdo. Can you hear the fan in the background? Well, I need that fan. Even though I can control the temperature in this, whatever you would call it, apartment, condo, home. Although it's a bitch to keep cold and hot because of all the windows. But we have a lovely view of nothing. The patio. Oh my God! The weather is getting to the point where I can sit out on the patio and, shit, it's raining. Whatever. Okay, so I've totally flamed out coming out of the starting gate, but let's head on over to Jeffrey. Let's see if he's got any candy for us. Trick or treat, Jeffrey! Give me something good to eat, or listen to, or I have no idea where this metaphor is going.
Hello, it's Jeffrey Fisher here with my entries for week number 389, Deception. My first story is called Last Trick. They say that magic is really the art of deception. The left hand creates a distraction so the right hand can whisk away the object, making it disappear. The magician's stage patter and his beautiful assistant provide dual distractions for the magician to open hidden compartments. The conjurer, who called himself Mysterio, planned one last deception, but it was his most important. During the trick of the sawed lady, he did his usual misdirection for the audience, then killed his cheating partner before disappearing beneath the stage, his getaway set. When police officers arrested Mysterio, leaving the back door of the theater, Detective Smith looked the killer in the eyes. He said, "We're not that dissimilar. Sometimes police work also involves an artful deception." This story is called A Gray Area. When Marcus began his affair, he gave no thought as to how he'd managed to keep his wife in the dark. As time went on, however, he began to run out of excuses for coming home late. He hit on the idea of faking a book club so he could be out of the house on a regular schedule. He typed up a list of books they would read, he invented fictional participants, and even baked cookies every few months when it was ostensibly his turn. His deception ended when his wife followed him one night. When the door opened, the entire club consisted of Marcus and a lingerie-clad brunette. "Gee," said Marcus's wife, "I didn't realize tonight's book was 50 Shades of Grey."
I have not read that book yet. Honestly, I haven't. I haven't read that book. Everybody else in the world has read that but me. I don't know. I'm waiting for, 16.8 million Shades of Color by Steve Jobs. Yes, I have, or Jobs, whatever. Okay, I become a Mac head. I have an iPhone. I have a MacBook. Well, I use a MacBook. And Dana has an iPad. I don't have a pad. I don't need one. the screen on this phone is good enough, except when I first wake up. Yeah, I know, I'm getting old. I don't need glasses. What I need is to finally... Either we're going to get Gina a truck, and I'll take her old one, or fuck it, I don't want to wait. I'll just get a Toyota Corolla. So what's something cheap that just works? All I have to do is do 2 miles to get to work and 2 miles back. Maybe it's going to become like 5 or 6 miles. I really want an electric, but yeah, I said we're not in a house. We're in an apartment currently. But hey, we're going to work on that too. This is the year. Castle 100-word stories land. Castle crap. Probably some shitbox in Bel Air. Anyway, what? Oh, right. Thank you, Jeffrey. God, I'm full-on neurotic today. I should just hand over to Spate. Spate! Save me from myself. Please. Oh, God, I should shut up.
Hey, this is Spate, and my story this week is called Triple Deception. And here it is. Maybe I exaggerated the truth a little bit. Okay, I lied. But it was my lifelong dream to be an author, and when this job asking for a writer came up, well, I had to lie. Who's going to hire a writer whose only experience was a few 100-word stories? And they weren't even that good. But in the end, it turned out it was their deception. Tickets! The only thing I would be writing were tickets! My job was to write freaking parking tickets? Well... at least my legs look absolutely stunning in this meter maid uniform.
Oh, man. I bet they do. But you have to shave them. Well, every other day. Thank you, Spate. Oh, man. Oh, I did something for you. Okay, there's this thing called noise reduction in Audacity. I ran it because you had a little bit of hum on your microphone. Cleaned it up. How does that sound? Although it probably... I reduced these to 64K so that it doesn't, you know, fill up people's Rovios or whatever you call them these days, your Walkman Digitals. I hear that Apple is coming out with something, and maybe Google will too. You know, that's how far behind I am in the lingo. The kids these days, I'm turning sailboats, baby. Sailboats. Haley says I'm turning 38. That's her problem. Coffee. All right. 3 stories in. Actually, more than 3 stories, because Jeffrey had a few, and Thomas, he's just, man, he's writing a novel over there. And I got to tell you, writing 100-word stories can get you a professional writing gig. Of course, it's technical writing. But, hey, it pays the bills. And, you know, I can afford to... Oh, well. All right, so how about I just get my foot out of my mouth and say, hey, Lizzie, save my ass. You don't have to. You can just save a template.
Some doors are best left closed, he said when he got back home. She became angry at him because she thought it was better to clarify things, to talk about what was not right, to be honest. It was easy to get trapped in routines and entangled in petty little everyday life bickering. To grow above that, we cannot open all doors, he replied. She tried to understand, but she couldn't. Unspoken, muddled half-truths broke her heart. He walked away. I'm right, he thought, only to become so lonely in his fake righteousness. She stayed, alone, behind a closed door. This was my story for this week. Drop by my blog at lizziegoodcough.blogspot.com. And talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Element, open the... Did I get that right? Hold on. If you look up on YouTube for the metric alphabet, Element, open the door. There you go. Although, is it on YouTube? I don't know. I remember the original. It was the metric alphabet. Hold on. The metric alphabet. Searching. And yes, images for the... What? Okay, everybody knows the sound clip and Hank and... What the crap? Where the hell is it? All right. Oh, there. Okay. So, SNL transcripts. Year 75. And then 75, the decibet. There you go. Season 1, episode 18. Which shows you how freaking old I am. It's Dan Aykroyd. Oh, my God. God. It's, where is it? LMNO, open the door. Here we go. LMNO will be condensed to single letters. Incidentally, a boon to those who always had trouble pronouncing LMNO correctly. This is just screwed up. Mucus will be LMNO mucus. Except just... honey, would you LMNO open the door? You see? It's in there. Never mind. Just look it up. Right. Oh, thank you, Lizzie. My God, I'm just losing it. I'm just all over the map today. Well, let's get back on the map here with Richard. You know where Richard is on the map? He's over in Richardland. Well, how are things going over there in Richardland, Richard? Are they Richardy? Oh, cool. It's like Smurf, only Richard. Okay, here's Richard.
Good morning, and thank you, Jeffrey, for that story. Did I get it right? Was it Jeffrey? If it was somebody else, I'm really sorry, but thank you for your story, too. I'll get on with mine. The first story is number 28 in the ongoing saga of George. Fort Hope, it transpired, relied heavily on the art of deception. Clever use of shipping containers, sheet metal and bits of old machinery contrived to give the impression of a secure, well-fortified compound. The reality was very different. The fortress would struggle to hold off any determined assault and was a potential death trap for anyone caught inside. It did, however, provide a much-needed sense of security. The resistance were a pretty disorganized bunch, but no more so than George himself, and for the first time, George dared to think that his fortunes had changed for the better. Let's move on. This one's called Place Your Bets. Now, watch my hands carefully. Rapidly I switched the cups, sliding them quickly across the table under the observant gaze of the mark, egged on by his friends. Now, which one is the pea under? He chose the left and lost the bet, as he always would, no matter which cup he decided on. The gullible might call what I do magic. Others may say sleight of hand. To the cynical, it's a confidence trick, but however you dress it up, it's deception, plain and simple. You can call it whatever you like. To me, it's money in the bank. My third story this week is called Monkeys. It's not really deception. I prefer to call it enterprise. My publisher gives me a topic. I pass it to my team of trained monkeys. They come up with the stories and I claim all the credit. Why monkeys? Well, they're cheaper than paying ghostwriters. For the cost of a few old typewriters and plenty of bananas, I get all the stories I want. Sometimes they get it wrong. Occasionally, they poop on the manuscripts. And I do wish they'd stick to producing short stories. For some reason, they're obsessed with typing the complete works of Shakespeare. And here's my last story this morning. It's called Coming Soon. In a world where movies are sold on the strength of their trailers, deception is the name of the game. This year, we'll take every explosion, every car chase, and every romantic interlude from a 3-hour movie and cram it into a 2-minute trailer. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you'll be completely convinced that this is the greatest movie ever made. But it's not. It's 3 long hours of mindless tedium, bad acting, and confusing plot, interspersed with 2 short minutes of stunning, raw action. But what do we care? As long as you're paying to watch it.
And that's it, folks. I'm off to get a new throat fitted. Until next week, goodbye.
Oh, man, I totally forgot. I asked everyone to guess who was going to come before them. You see, I come up with these stupid things, and then I whip my hair, I hit my head, and then I forget. And then I babble for 20 minutes. Oh, man. Folks, he's the only one that's done it so far. Do you all listen to this thing once it's up? You need to listen. You need to comment. You need to tell folks, hey, man, that was a great story. It changed my life. I now don't turn off the airbags in my car. Instead, I turn them all on, and I pop them every time. It's fun. I put popcorn in them. Thank you, Richard. And all you others, you're going to burn. Speaking of burning, how about some updates from Tom? I bet you that there's a big announcement this week. That's right, a big... How about I just hit play?
Hello, Night People. Tom here, and I've got some updates. Let's start with the list of golden monkeys. Norval Joe, Andrian Dodge, Tom, Ellison, Guy David, Justin Lomaster, Anima Zipoletta, Caleb Bullen, Steve the Nuclear Man, TJ, Zach Mann, Liana, Thomas, Singh, Zach Mann, Muncie, Danny, Cliff, Planet C, and Jeffrey, who needs to be added to the list. Authors close to 100, Tura, 96, Lizzie, 91. Movement, Cliff is now the 12th monkey, passing Anima. Jeffrey is now the 14th monkey, moving ahead of Danny. Lizzie is now the 18th monkey, displacing Red Goddess. In a mere 3 weeks, Richard will break into the top 20, and then too, Spate will become the 100th monkey. Folks still in the running for Iron? Cliff with 88, Serendipity 82, Jeffrey 65. Current Iron Monkeys, Phil 251, Z 204, Tom 162 and 148 respectively, Guy 125, TJ 118, Zach Mann 110, and Muncie 108. We have had 50 new authors in the past 90 weeks, story average 17.30, story average over the last 115 weeks just under 24. Story total, 5,666. And of minor note, your humble scribe is shadowing the 8th position held by Guy David with a run of 170 stories.
It's like ESPN for storytelling, I'm telling you, man. This dude loves his number. Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. One thing, Tom. Serendipity is listed in the monkeys on the page. Was that a mistake? I don't want to take anything from Serendipity. She might bite my fingers off. But, you know, I can always use my feet. So, what am I supposed to do? Add, remove, just, we should just quietly do this under the table. Oh, right. You've still got stories. Okay, hold on. Let me just flip the record over.
Hello, Night People. Tom here. And I've got 3 stories tonight. First, if you try real hard, you get what you need. She was practiced at the art of deception. Yep, that's my mom. Wouldn't think it, but a hardcore rock and roller, serious Robert Johnson fan, spent late nights talking politics with Mick. Even in his 20s, the front man was a serious Tory. Good friends they were. She pulled some major strings when the lads got in that nasty business with drugs. Music money helped her quiet rise through Parliament. In 67, she, Rockefeller, and Jagger attended a reception for the International Monetary Fund in New York, all posh and all. But that night, all sympathy for the devil. Story 2, Waltz Across America. In the U.S., the divorce rate is roughly 2 out of 3 marriages. The sheer mass of ongoing infidelity should have had a profound effect on the American psyche. But thanks to refined levels of cognitive dissonance and an open embracing of daily deception, we collectively maintain a neo-Puritan view of marriage. Personally, I think it's more a matter of comedy dell'arte. Some of us have been given the mask of the ruling class. Others, the mask of the serving class. In a futile effort to adapt to the airs of our betters, we have abandoned our own true nature, serial shagging. And the last story, a continuation of a well-defined relationship, part a sipple. Mother moved towards the street. She was checked by the senator's hand. We won't overtake this crowd. There is another way. Further, no small amount of deception will be needed. With mother in tow, the senator headed back across the tea room, through the kitchen entrance. He started rummaging through the pots and pans. For a moment, Widow Parsons wondered what on earth was he doing. Her son was at the mercy of some mob. The honorable gentleman was wasting his time with cooking utensils. "One size fits all," said Mr. Smith, raising 2 spaghetti strainers. Out the loading dock they went.
Wait, 2 spaghetti strainers? Most people have just 1. What is he up to? Oh, thank you, Tom, once again. Once again, thank you, Tom. Tinny just dropped by.
Hello, Tinny. No, Tinny butt.
She is such a small cat. Fun to pick up and then go,
Tinny, Tinny, Tinny.
She hates her name. She looks at me like, mm. Although she's got that little in her mouth because she had a, when we cleaned her up, she had a cut in her lip and on her nose, a broken fang that had to be pulled that had issues. And so she's got a smirk. Got a little kitty smirk when she gets all excited. It's like, hmm? Attitude cat. Oh, sorry. Thank you, Tom. Have I thanked you twice? Thank you 3 times. Now you appear and scare the deetses. Instead of scaring the deetses, how about Tura has returned from Turaland or Richardland or whatever it is. I have no idea what land. What are you doing, cat? Okay, so I have so many Pez dispensers now. They're starting to stack up. I need to get these out of their shells and the duplicates, get them stacked away. And I know. I need more shelves. I need a bigger place. I'm not going to put them in the car that I get, or truck, or whatever. Rickshaw. Ooh, I could get a rickshaw. That might be cheaper. Do you get Discover Cashback on that? Oh, sorry. Here's Tura.
The new client showed me his business card. Master of the Art. Deception. What art? I asked. The art of deception, he exclaimed. In a flurry of movement, he transformed into a tall, slender, faceless figure, tentacles waving from his back. Okay, Slenderman impression, I said in my bored voice. I can probably find you some work at Halloween parties. Anything else? He changed into a Jedi with a lightsaber. Then a Pink Panther. My resume, he announced importantly, presenting an envelope. It was a writ from my ex's lawyer. He gloated. Deception, writ server, wins again.
They always win. Oh, thank you, Tura, and welcome back. And I was supposed to say something here. Oh, yeah, Casey Kasem apparently is being held hostage by Jean Kasem, which, hey, if you're going to be held hostage by someone, if she's still got it, man, I'm telling you, I don't mind. I wouldn't mind. But, you know, if she's gone the plastic surgery crazy route, I mean, no. I mean, if she's turned into Evil Cher, no. But, you know, if she's turned into Hot Cher, okay, yeah, all right. Whatever, Barbie. That's rude of me. his family wants to see him. Kind of sad. She won't let them see him, but they can do a long-distance dedication. A goddamn dog named Sparky. What the hell do I give a shit about a goddamn dog? Oh, sorry. What I should do is take my foot out of my mouth again. It is kind of tasty. And welcome back, Stephen the Nuclear Man, who is most nuclear and most man.
She's still online. Quotes pump out on her Twitter feed, one every 3 hours. Her Tumblr shares funny images, the occasional poignant quote. 3 posts a day. I read her blog every Monday, 10 in the morning, like clockwork. The rest of it doesn't matter. Not the bounced emails, not the offline indicator on Jabber or Facebook or Skype. Not the stuffy home with the overwrought quasi-Victorian wallpaper, the smarmy attendant, the stifling heat in the suit jacket in the stone-littered field. Her weeping parents. The casket. None of it. She is still online. For now, she's still alive.
Thank goodness. Oh. Thank you, Stephen the Nuclear Man. I should not be reacting to these stories. I think I'm not doing anyone any favors by that. What I should do is finally bite the bullet, get GarageBand on here, learn how to use it, and set up chapters so you can, you know, go story to story and ignore my little ramblies, or create 2 versions of the podcast where it's just one is the ramblies and the other is, you know, just one to the next, to the next, to the next. And you have the option, whether the clean feed or the I'm being a rambly jackass. So if there's like 2,000 comments that say, hey, I want a clean feed, my server will melt down. Actually, it won't. It is pretty well the... We won't talk about that. What we will talk about is, thank you, Stephen, and the Nuclear Man, of all things. So there's been a lot of things going on in that virtual pixel pervert world of Second Life. The company that runs it changed their terms of service in a way that I've been advised to... I took down my stories on textures and note cards and... if I'm sandboxing or collaborating, I do it on Google Documents. I have a Google document that I share that's just my general sandbox sketchup that others can edit, and then I have one that I can just put up to and people can look at. Or, God forbid, I had, a website with a podcast. But the terms that allowed the reselling, them unfettered license to resell, is what gets it. You will lose any exclusive publishing deals. You will have to make the case. Like, if you say it's an insignificant market or it's some kind of, you know, SketchUp, you might be able to do it, but you got to protect the value of your work. And that's what I'm doing. So when I do live readings on Saturday mornings, I've been told if there's a fight over that, they have the right to use, if they're recording, I'm not uploading to them. So it's anything uploaded. I'm not uploading. I'm streaming. So anything streamed, that's the first argument. The second argument against is if I'm reading it, they can have that specific performance, which I could throw in chariots and totally ruin it. But they have that specific performance. Now, if they start transcribing that stuff, now they're stealing. They don't have a right to do that. Although they say, we can do this, and we can do anything! And then, fuck you. So, I'm being careful. Others aren't. Others are saying I'm an overreactive jackass, that others are being paranoid and whatever. Hey, I'd rather be careful. If your work has value to you, be careful. get the advice of an agent, an attorney, a small child, or just protect your shit. I know people in there, and including me, can be a little overreactive. A little overreactive, my God. But you know what? One thing I do admire, though, is Brinley, really let them know, you know, that this is unacceptable. And I've never respected the idea of volunteering your services for free for a for-profit company. I mean, all this crap of your world, your imagination, your this. What a crock of shit. What a lie. What a true marketing lie. Yeah, it's your imagination. And hey, we're gonna sell it right back to you. They're going to sell us the ropes they hang us with. But, you know, it's, what was the old thing? All the stuff about the castle in the air, someone builds it, someone dreams it, someone lives in it, and then the psychiatrist charges the rent? No. It's the lab that charges the rent. They've taken that joke and made their whole business model off of it. So, folks, be careful with your original work. You probably even shouldn't be giving it to me, but what I do, I put the Creative Commons license up there, share and share alike, blah, 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 protected, whatever, non-commercial. For mine, but yours, you have all your licenses and all that too. That too, you know, I'm not going to use your stuff for profit. I've sworn it, and you even have my address if you look up the whatever, and you can shotgun me to death. Although, don't do a star 80. If I haven't done anything totally stupid with your stuff, okay, don't go killing me for shit I didn't do. But hey, I'm not going to do that crap. I've got enough of my own. But if you want to shop it over to Drabblecast, shop it, you know, make an anthology, make a book out of it, become a big success, I'm not going to be knocking at your door saying, hey, how about a little cut of the action? I'm not going to do that. Because that would involve travel. And I'm not going to write a letter or an attorney or this or that. Because that takes effort. It's a new argument in courts. And I don't like people dressed all in black. And judges, they tend to do that. They don't wear nice colors in the courtroom. So, what the shit was the point of this? Anyway, any of you that want to discuss this or whatever, put it in the comments. Hey, now you got something to comment about. Now we can have ourselves a little argument saying, no, please steal my stuff. Take it all. Become a millionaire with it. I don't care. Tattoo it on your body. Be a performance artist. Have people read it in Braille. Creeps. Oh, right. Speaking of creepy, how about something from Serendipity, who I don't know if she's a monkey or not. Man, that was one long intro.
I received one of those spam emails from a Nigerian businessman offering to make me a millionaire. Do these people really think we're gullible enough to fall for such blatant attempts at deception? It was high time that somebody fought back. I hacked into his mail server, set up a redirect, and waited to see what would happen. Surprisingly, it seems people are actually pretty gullible. Every day, I've been getting emails, accompanied by large deposits into my bank account. Deception, it seems, really does pay, and thanks to my helpful Nigerian businessman friend, I have indeed become a millionaire.
Thank you, Serendipity, and we'll be putting that email address up in the show notes so all of you can become millionaires. Millionaire, billionaire, zillionaire. Okay, who's next? Oh, all right, this is the moment you've been waiting for. That's right, Singh is closing out the Lakshmi... what is the Lakshmi anyway? I forgot. After all this time, I'm like, what the... Huh? Yeah, I just took a break to listen to Rich DeSoto Palmer Soto... Rich DeSoto Palmer Safe Songs. Space Songs! And I'm back, and right in time for Singh, Lakshmi Plot. And if you want to hear this whole thing, I'm going to tell you where you can after you listen to the ending. Did that just spike the... Yeah, it did. Okay, here's Singh.
The Lakshmi Plot, Part 8, by Chris Mooney Singh.
It was dark when Beam returned to the hut and handed over the catfish and crabs. Devika had been doing her hut chores and collecting water, but felt a nagging loneliness. Priya seemed disturbed also. "Where's Baba?" Devika asked, passing Beam a cup of goat's milk. "Gone," is all he answered, drinking only half the cup. Devika boiled the crabs and fish pieces. She was rationing the oil. The lack of basic supplies in the shaman's store was beginning to frustrate her. That night she pulled her sleeping mat next to her husband, but he had turned to the window. She felt rows of bamboo had grown between them. It wasn't conscious deception. His dialogues and savage journeys would have scared her. Neither would he have known how to explain about the old man's death. Instead, he spent more hours on the water than he needed to for fishing. As weeks passed, she noted him spending long hours too in the temple, and after hearing strange voices, she sometimes crept up close to listen. Had visitors come? The prospect of returning to the world of community and familial warmth was her one wish. Meanwhile, he hunted her away with harsh words. Bim didn't mean to shut out Devika, but the inner life demanded its due. After the shaman's death, he had felt the Baba's power increasing day by day in him, but hadn't noticed a new sharpness in his tone. Devika didn't know what to do, but kept on with her chores and purposely forgot to wear the mask sometimes when going for water, just to spark a reaction from him. His words were jagged, but better than no words at all. She took refuge in her Lakshmi Puja morning and evening, and from resentment stopped going to Bonobibi's temple. Each day, Bim Das was becoming part of the Sundarban's untamable echo-cosm. Representing Bonobibi's symbolic brother, Shah Jungli, the go-between rider of the tiger soul, prowled through the shamanic levels assuming goddess power. Each shaman became his human face. And soon, Bim would have to assume duties with the villagers, park officials, and be ever watchful of poachers. Yet, who would authorize a young man in place of the old shaman? Now, Bhim Krishna Das would have to go and assert and become acceptable as the man who could offer protection prayers for fishermen, honey gatherers, woodcutter, charcoal makers. Meanwhile, he went on the tiger journeys, mentally visiting old villages and farms across the water that once dotted the long canal that linked the thatched communities. Eventually he saw the crumbling heap that had been the concrete flood shelter, like a bombed-out building. Only one corner was still standing. His amber eye couldn't help searching for a drowned mother, for that calm, gentle voice within the desolation of broken shards and bones. But there was no presence he could detect here and reunite with. The pool of maternal blood had been washed away by the sacrificial blood of the shaman. As Bim desired, he saw. The floods had subsided and some people were rebuilding, but the land had been poisoned by salt. Engineered cash crop rice had rotted away into sludge. Nothing would grow for years, and a farmer without land was a wage slave. He followed the tributary canal beyond Sitapur, searching for his own piece of river frontage. How different it looked! The river had changed its course in the floods. He looked for any landmark, and finally, there was his mango grove, far away from the water's edge. the flood had almost doubled the size of his land. Bim trained his tiger eye and saw the stone grotto. Focusing even closer, he could see the old image of Lakshmi was intact, and the hand pump beside it was no longer under flood water. But there was an even more remarkable thing that had survived. It was the Lakshmi plot, that little field that his father, Bapu Das, had made Bim Das promise never to uproot. Tall and spindly, it stood defiantly flood-resistant. How many generations of storm surge had this local variety survived? The salvation of the land was in the land. Here was the seed stock for a new uprising, and that real endurance is in the original genes. Now he had something to offer his wife and daughter. They could regenerate with even more land than before. Bim drew back to the jungle and regained consciousness, slumped over in the forest temple. Soon he told her, "Cello, we're going back. Get ready." But then her doubts and questions arose. Where? Our farm is gone. How will we live? A mother needs community for her child to grow up in, and she was relieved. But he silenced her. "Stop thinking, woman." She hated that tone, yet had to bow. He was the husband, the authority, the protector who had saved them. Yet for what? To wear masks backwards throughout their lives? Who would Priya one day marry? A monkey? They had suffered enough. Leaving, she could reclaim the husband she was losing daily. Although she did not understand Bim's inner life, she could see the modern thinker had been transformed to a jungle goddess devotee. Why couldn't he just follow Lakshmi, the wealth devi, who was the link to the comfort and community she had known and loved? But Bim had hardened, and she blamed this wild place and Bono Bibi, who represented it. Neither did she want to have to wear widow whites, as custom demanded, when her husband returned here, as she knew he would. Or worse still, have to one day join the village of tiger widows. No, she would rather be dead. Baby on hip, Devika brought a bag, cooking pot, and the goat, while Bim did farewell prayers in the temple. Stepping down toward her, she saw the smiling husband she had once married. Yes, he seemed glad to be going home too, although he sternly reminded her to put her mask on backwards. They made their way back down the trail to the boat beached on the mangrove mud. Bim helped Devika aboard with the baby, then gathering up the goat by its legs, passed the bleating bundle to tether inside the shelter. Devika nursed Priya while perched at the prow. Bim pushed off from mud, poling into the tributary toward the entrance to open water. Seeing Lakshmi's spindly plot of sprouting rice in his vision had returned the feelings of the farmer in him, and yet this habitat had become a home as well. It had saved his family during the floods. Devika, too, was feeling alive and refreshed by the open breeze after so many weeks cooped up in that hut and nearby surroundings. Then she called out, "Look!" It was the pink-grey dorsal of a Gangetic dolphin. It stayed ahead of the boat as if leading them to open water. Bim thought it a good idea to cast a final net for their journey, and soon he and Devika traded places. She kept the boat steady while he cast in the narrow space next to the shore. Soon enough, he netted a baby bull shark, and after landing it, thrashing in the net, clubbed it unconscious at the bottom of the boat. Now the vessel was drifting bayward. Again they switched positions, and Bim commenced poling underneath the last mangrove overhang at the end of the island. Here the branches dipped low like fingers wanting to trail in the water. Just before the prow scraped under the leaves, Devika threw off her mask. She was glad to be rid of that, and bending over undid her plait, letting her hair cascade downward, exposing her neck. She disappeared from view, and then Bim felt the boat lurch. He couldn't see what was happening, but he heard her sharp, brief struggle and cry. Using the boat for momentary purchase, the tiger had leapt directly out of cover and cleared 20 astonishing feet with her gripped in its meat-stained incisors to the other side of the tributary island like an orange comet against blue. Bim yelled, but it was too late. The tiger had crushed her neck and was dragging her into the jungle opposite. He quickly shifted course to follow and strained his eyes to see beyond the last tip of its tail. But midstream, he realized in his heart it was over. If he got down, he would have to leave his baby girl crying and unprotected. The bleating goat, too, had smelled the beast. Tigers were good swimmers and could easily reach them from either side. All he could do was paddle and try to mute the chaos in his thoughts. An hour into the bay, he stopped and slumped at the stern, stunned. Despite his inner journeys, visiting the tiger temple, witnessing the end of the old shaman, nothing had prepared him for the utter desolation of this moment. She, who he had travelled so far with, had been snatched from him at the last moment. "Why, Ma, haven't I done everything you wanted? You said it was time to leave. Go do my work there, you said. Why take her and not me?" He felt tricked and deceived that the contract of the shaman had to be sealed in blood. His baby daughter was still crying inside the shelter. Bim went to comfort himself as much as her. It hit him then how little he really knew his own child. Devik had done everything. He had protected and provided, but done little of the nurturing. Now she was his only link. Laying down, he held the child close, trying to smell Devika's presence. Then noticed her shoulder bag against his neck. He nestled into it like a pillow and breathed. This was all that was left, and for a long time he let himself drench the cotton bag with his tears. It was dark when he lifted his head. Priya was whimpering. He had to feed her and forced the goat up, wet his hands with seawater to work the teats. Dipped again and again into the creamy liquid, Priya suckled on his finger. It was clumsy work, but the best he could do until she was satisfied. It would have been so much easier to stay floating in limbo, but he had to paddle now for the child's sake and face the new double existence awaiting him. Bim nestled her against the goat's udder and commenced the final journey for home.
Stuff. Thank you, Singh. And Okay, so all of the Lakshmi plot is available up at chrismooneysing.com. If you go into the show notes, click on Sing right there. And you can listen to the whole thing by Sing all at once. One big thing. Listening parties. You can have one of those. Next time I do something in the mountain, I may just play the whole thing there. So thank you, Sing. Wow. That's storytelling for you, folks. I'm never, even the Wacky Adventures of Abraham Lincoln, just barely in the shadow, man. That's, whew. So I wonder what he's going to start with next week. Thank you, Sing. There are going to be people like, well, why don't you ever do that for mine? Well, I do. I just have the microphone muted because I don't want it to get to your heads. His dude, he's got the, it's already in his head, man. This dude's like, you know, haha, I'm the Maradona Pele, or whatever. I should just shut up and stop being a fanboy. How about Muncie? How about you take over at this point? Save my ass for myself. What? Okay, sure. All right, here's Muncie.
Greetings, fun boy. Muncie here and calling you fun boy, because I recently rewatched The Crow, and for the record, it holds up shockingly well. I was pleasantly surprised, and heartily recommend you check it out. Story time, fun boy. Story time. Talent by Christopher Monroe. I'm a man of many talents. A fair writer, decent actor, and goodish comedian. But my greatest talent, if I had to choose, is my talent for self-deception. Which is convenient, since, of them all, it's the talent I find time to use every single day. I tell myself I'll be okay. I tell myself I deserve happiness. And, like a chump, I believe it. So, to everyone who ever said my talents would never get me anywhere, I say, look at me now. I'm king of the world. Or, at least, I will be. So far as I know. Broken Escalator is a podcast and an ebook. ChristopherMonroe.blogspot.com. Tweets at Munzee Munzee. Until next time, fun boy, I leave you to your business. Fun business, no doubt. Fun business.
Thank you, Muncie. And I'd like to state for the record that at no time did I forget to include your story in the podcast and then catch it at the last moment before I was ready to... Okay, fine. I forgot. I have these numbered. You know, 9, Serendipity, 10, Sing, 11, Muncie, 12, Zachman. And what did I do? I kind of skipped to between 10 and 12. So I'm sorry, but hey, I'll just delete this. So instead, what I'm going to do is say thank you, Muncie, and then go, Zach man, are you ready? And no one will be the wiser.
I think my niece has started lying to me. First, she told me she read Deception Point by Dan Brown, which is crazy because people buy Dan Brown books, but nobody reads them. Then, she told me she was flying to Philly to check out schools. After I said something about Manila, she countered she meant Philly as in Philadelphia. I told her everyone knows Philly is short for the Philippine Islands. Philadelphia is just made up for that cartoon show all the guys are watching. Besides, you don't really want to move away from me to the other coast.
Wait, which other coast? West Coast? East Coast? Gulf Coast? Gold Coast? Mosquito Coast? Ooh, maybe we should have coast as a topic. Someone suggests coast as a topic. I can't remember these things. Just say coast, and because you can coast like, hey, let's coast. And then like, a coast, if you're Canadian. Are you? Are you Canadian? Ooh, Canada! We can do one on Canada. All the Canadians will hate the Americans for doing the A and the hockey jokes and whatever. We'll do that on Canada Day. When is Canada Day, anyway? It's like February 29th or something? Great, now they're going to hate me. Don't hate me, Canada! Actually, Canadians can't hate. I thought it wasn't in their DNA. Oh, thank you, Zach, man. They'll just, you know, eh? Damn it. Okay, first rule of holes. Stop digging. So next up, it's Bonchance and Sevi. They've returned, and they're back with a vengeance. Unless they're Canadian, then they're back with a perturbedness. And here they are.
Crap Mariners, 100-word challenge. This week's challenge word is deception. This is a collaborative work between Severina Halostar, Bonchance Longfall. Deception. Janet sat quietly as the quick-witted editor tweaked her story. She had completed a comprehensive background search on the topic. Her story was solid. She excelled at writing. It was clearly self-defense. The man had a concealed weapon. The Game Boys liked to play the pick a loser and scare to death with a stun gun game. The boy's gun misfired. The man's did not. For effect, the editor chose a picture of the victim's gun and dramatized the boy's hospital experience. The facts would still be in the story, but the deceptive innuendo would shine through.
Thank you. Sevi and Bonchance. Ha! I changed things up. Ha 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 ha! What? Oh, sorry. Where did I put the stack of... Okay, there are the stack of stories. And there, I've got them all. What I do is I save off the files, put them in order with numbers, like 14, Norval Joe. And that's MP3, and I just drag and drop. Except some kind of... Never mind. What I'm going to do is go ahead and drag over a few more, and there, and there, and there. Oh, this is going to be good. You're going to like this one. Norval Joe. I don't think the name Durgle is in here. I hope Fly Paperboy is back. That he's always fun.
Hello, this is Philip Norval Joe Carroll, and this is my entry for the weekly challenge number 389 with a prompt of deception. As far as I can tell, this is my 260th straight weekly challenge, and I believe that makes 5 years as of this one. Maybe it's 5 years next week, because I think the first one I ever did was October 11th or something crazy like that. But here's my story. A cow, a sheep, and a deer stood at the lunch counter eating veggie burgers. The deer held up a piece of paper for the other two to see. "This has been circulating through the department all morning," deer said, scratching an antler. "Apparently there's a picture of a duck wearing combat boots within these squiggly lines." Turning his head one way and then the other, sheep said, "I don't see it." Cow swallowed her cud and said, "According to humans, the deception is in the optical illusion." "Humans are weird," sheep said, and the others agreed. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. No, the sheep was not a wiener dog in disguise.
So we're over an hour into the show, and I'm saying thank you, Norval Joe. Usually I say thank you, Norval Joe, about 10 hours into the show. What? It's been an hour. You probably skipped that. It's like, oh, I just want to see how it ends. Well, okay, here we go. Thank you, Norval Joe, and here's Danny. See, that's how it ends.
Oh, finally. Hello, hello. Danny Dwyer here with Weekly Challenge 389, Deception. So, without further ado, Mia Farrow recently commented that her son Ronan may have been fathered by Frank Sinatra Sr. Barbara Sinatra, Frank's fourth and final wife, fired back, screaming, "Deception," stating, "It's just a bunch of junk. There's always junk writer lies that aren't true." Ronan Farrow responded, "Listen, we're all possibly Frank Sinatra's son." Interesting. I don't care who is deceiving who. Tell me more. Woody Allen, 77, told The Hollywood Reporter via his rep, "This article is so fictitious and extravagantly absurd that he is not going to comment." That comment itself is a deception, alleging that no comment is actually being made.
A little gossip there from Danny Dwyer, hitting the Hollywood headlines. Oh, yeah. What? Oh, we got more? Ooh, wait, Richard Garriott. I should follow him. I mean, he's the Avatar dude, right? Yeah. Oh, and then it's suggesting Marina Sirtis. Yeah, whatever. Michael Dorn. You know, all this rejected face. You know, whatever. And then Brent Spiner. Yeah, forget it! This is not going to be like Star Trek Second Generation stuff. All right, what? Hold on. I got to deal with something here. Okay, they're done. What? Huh? Oh, foo. Don't care. All right. Sure. Okay, thank you, Danny. And, sorry, I'm a little distracted at the moment. Okay, not distracted anymore. Just, what? Okay, how about I post up the story from Cliff? Would you like that? Okay, cool. Here's Cliff, his story. Enjoy.
Gerald looked at his sleeping mistress and shook his head. His situation would have been laughable if it weren't so sad. He'd married Alice in law school because she was from the right family, had the right look, and moved in the right circles. He'd always liked her, but he never truly loved her. Now that he was a senator and on the fast track to the Oval Office, he was quite stuck. As he closed the apartment door, he turned to find Alice holding her shoes and closing the door across the hall. They say the truth will set you free.
I gotta tell you that the truth has set me free. Thank you. And thank all of you. Oh, wait, no, we're not done yet. Okay, so I'll just thank Cliff. Okay, thank you, Cliff. And the... Oh, what? 59 degrees outside? Wow. This time of year? Cool. Actually, quite literally cool. Although, how am I going to get to the restaurant now? I'm thinking about going for Thai food, walking over to the Thai restaurant. But, nah, that takes effort. Let's take a look at the big radar. You know, the big radar. Oh, this is nothing passing through. Ugh, I can pogo stick to the restaurant. So, while I get my pogo stick greased up and ready, and don't read too much into that, here's Justin and his story.
Space Turtle, Justin Allmaster here from the SpaceTurtle.com. Really late. It's 4 minutes till actually being Sunday here. It's already Sunday there, where this podcast will be coming from. Anyways, still managed to get a story. It's about Team Fortress 2. It's simple, really. All I do is put on this paper mask and everyone thinks I'm on their team. Then I just walk around and stick knives in their backs, put disabling devices on their sentry guns when no one's looking. Naturally, this makes people nervous, and they start shouting that there's a spy around. Then I have to give every engineer a wide berth because they're hitting everyone with wrenches to see if they're me. The pyros are the worst, spritzing everyone with flame, and also spy checking. Hard, thankless work being a spy.
Why did you have to stab me? I'm only doing my job to keep my people moving and standing by the bomb. My turrets are unhappy. They bow their head in shame. The sappers are so heavy, and I know who to blame. I blame the spy. That dirty low back stabbing guy. He flicked his butt right in my eye. He'd make a Scottish Cyclops cry. I blame the spy.
I blame the spy. I blame the spy. Let's all blame this. Ooh. Have we ever had spy as a topic? We haven't. Oh, my. Okay. All right. So which ones have we come up with this week? We've come up with coast. Let me type in coast. And spy. So there you go. Spy, I blame the spy. So we'll all blame the spy. Ooh, blame. We haven't done blame yet. Man, we're getting a lot of good ones. And you aren't even sending them in. Shame on you people. Oh, thank you. No shame. Thank you. No, you're not a good host when you yell shame on you people. But really, shame on you. Thank you, Justin. And shame on you. I should just shut up now and hand it over to Planet Z. Is it noon yet? I haven't been doing my laundry today because I've got plenty of clean clothes. I've been buying clothes. Yes, I've been buying clothes. Probably get an Academy gift card this week and buy more clothes. Fat pants. Not fancy pants, fat pants. Although I have been good about eating oatmeal and yogurt because I had something fried in Mexican last week and yeah, that did a number on me. Still does. All it takes is like a hint of jalapeno. And I'm dead for a day. Sucks. Really does. I used to love stuffed jalapenos. I love grilling them and making them. Now, hate getting old. Oh well. Although I do like making rice with different mild spices. And putting lots of butter on it. A what? Oh, okay. Here's Planet Z, his story. Let's get this over with.
Every Wednesday, the delivery driver dropped off the wolf's clean clothes. Thank you, said the wolf. And he dragged the sack into his house. When he opened the sack, the wolf saw frilly and lacy things no self-respecting wolf would wear. What the fuck? He said, and he called the laundry service. We're terribly sorry, the laundry service said to the wolf. It appears that we swapped the tags between your laundry and another customer's. Across town, a sheep put on the wolf's leather jacket and acid-washed jeans. The phone rang, but she ignored it.
Because I'm bad,
she grinned.
That's a wrap, Santa! And that's it for this week on the 100 Word Stories Weekly Challenge, number 389. On the topic of deception, I want to thank everyone for being a part of this. Everyone. Yes, including you, the listener. The people who wrote the stories, recorded, sent them in. People who wrote them and then said, I'm not sure I should send this in. And they didn't. That's okay. You're a part of this too. Maybe next week you'll gut up and you'll join us for the topic of river. Until then, thank you very much for being a part of the podcast here. We're at oneadayuntilthedayidie.com. There's show notes, text of the stories, links to various things, all the authors who sent links, those who didn't, they're hiding from you. Track them down on Google Earth. That's it. See you next week. Until then, as always, keep it brief.